then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. With your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely croon. And a thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest Homeland, comrades. It's June the 5th, 2014. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Okay, Gretchen keeps scolding me about phoning the show in, so this'll be a little bit more me than usual. In this episode of Radio Free Northwest, I'm going to take some time to respond to a comment that I received on the Homeland blog regarding the May 22nd show. Now, this is going to be one of those cases where a lot of you are going to feel that I shouldn't be discussing these things in public. And I get where you're coming from, but my response to that is my usual one. With one or two exceptions, like maybe political cesspool, Radio Free Northwest has what is probably one of the largest audiences anywhere in our wee little subculture, i.e. the pure white racial or racist subculture, whatever you want to call it, white nationalism, so forth and so on. Now, this is an important topic. There's some facts and ideas that I really need to get out there. I need to reach as many racially aware white people as possible. And, of course, leave something on the permanent record regarding all of this for future guidance. And in my opinion, the benefits of getting my viewpoint in front of the people who need to hear it outweigh the risks and drawbacks of saying it in front of the small but significant number of hostile listeners who do not need to hear it. Yes, I know that we have hostile neighbors listening over the back fence. Well, according to Edward Snowden, so do all Americans. What can I tell you guys? We live in a police state. Deal with it. We Americans are going to have to learn to live in this police state and develop workarounds for the fact that we are being spied on. Or else say to hell with it and just tell people who are spying on us to go commit an unnatural act with themselves. Anyway, I promise you that this will be the last of the inside baseball stuff for a while. I know you don't like it, you don't want to hear it, as necessary as it is. And next week, we'll get back into the comfort zone with book reviews and ranting and raving about how wicked the federal government is and sobbing about what these evil bastards are doing to Bill White and Ed Steele and, oh, look what they're doing to us now. Isn't it all so horrible? Okay? In other words, the usual litany of nothing but whining complaint, which is what we've come to expect from the right wing as a whole and our little movement in particular. Okay, I won't name the comrade who made this comment on the blog. This person uses a female name, but he or she also uses an email address that rings a faint bell in my decaying senile brain. And it seems to me that that email address was at one stage associated with a male name. We get a lot of that gender confusion crap on the internet, and not just us. It seems to be a common, bizarre internet phenomenon. Or maybe my memory really is going Grandpa Simpson on me. Anyway, this is the comment. Since this seems to be serving as a cyber confessional booth this time around, let me confess why I haven't migrated Northwest. No evidence of sufficient manpower up that way yet. No evidence of any kind of infrastructure, think National Alliance facilities. no evidence of quality membership other than the few calling the shots. In other words, too little rank and file, and what little of those there are appear to have questionable quality. And I have no idea where this person gets that, but anyway, back to him or her. Harsh? No, just honest. And if honesty is not welcome, then perhaps I wouldn't be welcome. So I hope it is. In the meantime, and speaking strictly from my perception, the Northwest Front remains nebulous. I just don't perceive the shape of it. Who runs it other than HAC, what its resources are, and whether it truly has any quality membership in its ranks. Frankly, laying eyes on a gaggle of tattooed skinheads surrounding HAC would be a deal-breaker for me. And again, I have no idea where this person gets the idea that I hang around with tattooed skinheads, but okay, back to... For me, the membership had better remind me more of an FBI gathering than a Keystone State's skinheads. I just don't do freaks. So, until the amorphous shape of the Northwest Front solidifies out of the mist, I'm not budging. And you have to bear in mind that this comes from someone who I have no idea who they actually are, but I'm going to assume that this is sincere, and I'm going to address it because this person has very succinctly put what is probably the most common naysay we get. The demand that before you people actually do anything and respond with something besides words, somehow the Northwest Front must trot out a finished product. The details aren't your problem. Harold is this big genius because he writes so good. So obviously, Harold must be able to pull money and bodies and soundbites on CNN out of his ass. Never mind where we are supposed to get the money to buy 330 acres and put up prefab buildings and trailers and produce a National Alliance-style headquarters. Never mind where we're going to get the boots on the ground if no one will come here until everything's all set up and the cakes and ale and the picnic tables are set out. One answer to that, by the way, that I've heard is we're supposed to quote-unquote convert the local people first so that the incomers will have a support system to come to. I'm not quite sure how we're supposed to do that given the resources we have. I think people have this vision of me standing on a little street corner in Seattle someplace handing out little racist version of these Christian comic books that the Pentecostalists use. Anyway, we all know that since Harold writes so good, he must have some magic beans in his pocket which he could pull out and throw onto the ground and make it all spring up from the earth. And until Harold takes those magic beans out of his pocket, you ain't budging. I get at least a couple of versions of this every week, said with varying degrees of courtesy and circumlocution, and to be fair, most of you are polite about it. Also, most of you honestly find nothing wrong or shameful in that attitude at all. To you, with your 20th century more or less middle class upbringing, that attitude is perfectly reasonable and just playing it smart. And you probably honestly cannot understand why anyone else would see anything wrong with it. I mean, actually move someplace? Risk actual money and possessions? And maybe somebody finding out for what is basically to you just a hobby? Of course it's insane. I must be nuts to ask you to do that. I mean, Harold can't really, really expect you to do that. Can he? Now, I want to say something at the outset here. I'm going to be discussing this whole issue of where are the bells and whistles openly and honestly with you people, and I'm going to lay some things on the line, but I want you to understand something. I am not mad. I am not reading you the riot act or blaming you or cursing you out or berating you or putting you down or scolding you or tongue-lashing you or whatever. Okay, yeah, sometimes I do that, but not this time. Now, I have been dealing with variations on this naysay ever since I came home myself in 2002, and I'm beyond all that. I have come to accept that in this life one has to play the cards you're dealt. Almost all of you people listening to this are Americans who were born and raised in the 20th century, in some variation of what I suppose might be called the Pat Boone or Brady Bunch culture. and it would be absurd and pointless and counterproductive for me to blame you in any way for being who these evil people who control us have made you. Now, you have been socially engineered by the most subtle and pervasive political and intellectual tyranny in human history. It is unrealistic of me to expect you to respond in any other way besides that of a 20th century more or less bourgeois American, which means with words. You are what you are, and among other things, that means you have been socially designed from the ground up by 75 years of propaganda and peer pressure and cultural conditioning to do two things. To work, usually at some pointless and deadly boring job that the system needs done to keep itself going, and to consume, never participate. Put it this way, the American tradition of white males sitting on a couch spending their free time watching niggers throw or bounce a ball while stuffing themselves with unhealthy salty snacks and the worst beer of any nation on earth serves a much bigger and more sinister purpose than simply selling Doritos. My job, my challenge, is not necessarily to change what you are. In most cases, that's beyond me, and I'm finally coming to grips with that. But somehow, I have to get you to respond as if you were someone else from another place and time. Now, that's a pretty tall order, and some might say it's impossible. There is no secret reserve of buzz-cut stormtroopers and SS men from the 1930s, cryogenically frozen and buried under the North Woods somewhere, waiting like the frost giants to be awakened and come marching out into the world again. I know that, and at least I didn't spend all my life looking for them like Matt Cale did. All I can say is it has to be done. Somehow, I have to reach you people and get you to respond with something besides words. The very existence of the world in any recognizable form is at stake because, make no mistake, white men made the world. And when white men become extinct, the only two alternatives I can see are the entire Western Hemisphere turning into sub-Saharan Africa with the blacks and the browns reverting to spears once the white man is no longer around to manufacture firearms and ammunition, or else conquest by China and the transformation of the world into an incomprehensible Asiatic ant colony. That's my job, people. Somehow, I have to get you to respond to all this with something besides words. So let me tell you exactly how our current situation looks from where I sit. But first, here's Comrade Steve from Michigan again.
I've been hearing Mr. Covington speak about the white character issue for some time. I was wanting a definition of what he meant, and I found a list of things I think address this issue. White folk virtues. Courage. My fear does not keep me from defending my folk, my family, or myself. I conquer my fear. Discipline. I control my mind, will, and emotions. I do, of my own accord, what needs to be done. Fidelity. I keep the vows I make, especially those to folk, family, and self. Honor. I keep pure the name and honor of my folk, family, and self. Hospitality. For folk and family, I willingly share my food, hearth, and shelter. Industriousness. I perform my tasks with joy and honor, holding nothing back. Perseverance. I continue until I've met my obligations and my goals. Self-reliance. I support my folk, my family, and myself. I depend only on myself. I strengthen the independence of the folk and family. Truth. I search for and embrace the truth. When speaking the truth may harm my folk or family, I keep silent. Live with courage and honor, comrades.
Told you you'd be hearing a lot of him from now on, because that's the best short exposition anyone has come up with as to what you should be like. Look, in 25 words or less, yes, the Northwest Front could, in fact, roll out a finished product in pretty short order if we had the bodies and the money. We could do it if we could get only a minimal response from all of you guys other than words. Now, I will explain how, but first let me tell you exactly where we stand right now. First off, love it or hate it, right now our main means of presentation is the internet. It is the only means of mass communication we have access to. That means I have to spend most of my time every day sitting behind a computer. And that doesn't leave much time for leaping up onto cafe tables and rousing the mob to storm the Bastille like Camille Desmoulins did in 1789. Our starting point in any serious examination of our prospects has to be some internet-related stuff. Now, I can see your eyes start to glaze over, but hang on, stay with me. I am going to, at long last, attempt to answer one of the most tantalizing of all questions. How many of us are there? So all you FBI agents and U.S. attorneys who are monitoring this in your offices and cubicles, bend your ears down to the speakers. I can get a certain amount of data off my stat counter, and I'm not going to go into the lengthy and esoteric calculations that I used in order to come up with this pretty conjectural figure. The main problem was figuring out how many unique hits on our multiple websites to discount as FBI spies, spies for other law enforcement agencies like the Naval Intelligence Office up in Bremerton that keeps dropping by, SPLC, ADL, and other NGO spies, general left-wing antifas and idiots, niggers, Jews, this weird Canadian nigger who's trying to drive me to commit suicide by making mean internet posts about me. He haunts our websites under about 4 proxy IP addresses. I have no idea how many visits are him. And then, of course, there's movement goat dancers and dysfunctionals of various kinds, blah, blah, blah. In other words, how many hits and unique visitors to our sites do I discount as being completely useless, and how many are genuine white nationalists of one stripe or another, maybe not agreeing with the NF, but they've already been brought across? Also, how many of these unique visitors to the Northwest Front's multiple websites are legitimate first-timers, meaning people who are coming to our sites for the first time in order to get information on the Northwest Imperative? Now that I can make a guess at because the stat counter records how many visits we get from one IP address, so I can tell you that we still do get a lot of first-time visits. The question is, what is the motivation of these people? Are they genuinely racial, possibly former Muggles who are newly brought across and who are seeking genuine knowledge? Or are they just idle curiosity inquirers, looky-loos? We have no way of knowing. Okay, based on some time I have spent studying our stats from all our websites, a lot of rumination based on my 40 years of experience with all this and a lot of just plain guesswork, excluding probable cops, hostiles, and internet lunatics, counting only genuine white nationalists or sincere seekers of truth, looking at it on a monthly basis as opposed to a weekly basis in order to kind of even out the hills and valleys, and extrapolating from that, here it is. I am going to go out on a big limb here and say that Radio Free Northwest has an audience of approximately 3,000 regular listeners, and including the other websites, we get another 2,000 or so new or occasional visitors each week, who, for whatever reason, do not listen regularly, but who are for real people. In other words, potential white settlers who are racially aware and who listen at least intermittently. So, let's say that I'm directing these podcasts at approximately 5,000 people, most of whom I never hear from at all. Now, that's probably about right. I would be surprised if it's much more than that. Until I can persuade you guys to start posting the link in non-movement forums and make some serious effort to break the media blackout, that's probably where we'll peak. There are really not very many of us who have been actually brought across compared to, say, Britney Spears fans or Twilight fans or World of Warcraft players. We are, in fact, a tiny little subculture as far as the internet goes, although our potential is almost limitless, which I'll get into in a bit. Anyway, so let's take that as our premise. I'm talking to 5,000 white nationalists, enough to fill a pretty big auditorium with probably a couple of hundred FBI and SPLC punks up in the balcony yelling dirty words and throwing popcorn and soft drinks down on the audience. 5,000 people. So, if we've got 5,000 people, where's the finished product? I will tell you. But let's take a music break first, and don't worry, I'll give Rappus 8 a break this week. This is Medieval Babes, B-A-E-B-E-S.
Good afternoon, comrades. This is something that came my way as part of some suggested topics for RFN. I've decided to read the blog post pretty much verbatim as the author presented it, with only minor edits to make it more listener-friendly, or insert editorial comments. Many will probably find it a touchy subject, but it is something that should be addressed, so here goes. Should a white nationalist be entertained by television? This is intended to be a warning to my folk in the white nationalist movement, but could easily be of use to all people concerned with protecting their consciousness. My first comment has nothing to do with the watching of television at all, but questions whether you can afford to waste the time that you are going to spend. I am certain there are other activities you could choose to participate in that would be more beneficial. Watching television is usually a very anti-social activity. Being a white nationalist should lead you to promoting your race, and doing so depends on you associating in a social way with folk of your kind. If you need activity other than working together, you could play cards or other games, at least something where you are fully conscious of your actions and surroundings. The first article about the dangers of television I encountered was from a Christian perspective, and therefore reflects the problem from the sin angle, so please keep that in mind as you listen. The following is lifted from the inplainsight.org website. Television programs are designed with the purpose of reprogramming your mind by breaking down your defenses so you will accept a lie as truth. Many of the anti-Christian and immoral precepts are bellowed forth in situation comedies. They get you to laugh, then they put forth their principles, and you have accepted their teachings without reservation. This is why much reprogramming is done through comedy. If homosexuality, lesbianism, or living together without benefit of marriage is portrayed, it is an attempt to retrain your thinking that these are just alternative lifestyles, claiming it is accepted by everyone else. Wrong! God doesn't accept it! The media is the puppet of a powerful group of international bankers, which of course we understand are the Jews. Their umbrella groups are the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, Order of Skull and Bones, etc. They are all pushing one world agenda on us, attempting to convince us that only a one world society will preserve us from war and famine, and the other world problems they create with a phone call. The one world agenda is as sinful today as it was back when God destroyed Satan's first attempt at Babel. Some consequences of being a teleholic. Loneliness. Staying home and watching TV isolates you from other people. God created us to be social creatures requiring human interaction. Loss of human contact will cause extreme loneliness. Depression. Excessive TV watching may cause depression because night after night you continually soak up the world's idea of what success and value is. We begin to believe our lives, when compared with those exciting ones we see on TV, are really valueless, and this type of thinking, when drilled into us daily, will lead to depression. Physical disease. Our bodies were made for motion, not to sit in one place for hours daily. Our muscles and the rest of our body needs exercise for proper fitness and clear minds. One can become obese because incessant TV watching leads to incessant eating. Fantasy lifestyle. This happens when we watch so much TV that we have trouble separating reality from fantasy. TV can cause us to live in an imaginary lifestyle, like believing illicit sex without consequences. Social drinking is mandatory. You must drive an expensive car, etc. An imitation of a TV lifestyle can ruin a life. Suicide. When a person believes they have no friends, no value, and that they do not measure up to the fantasy lifestyle they impose on themselves, they see no reason for living. They do not realize a satanic deception has taken place. If there was such a group as Teleholics Anonymous, their meetings would be more packed than Alcoholics Anonymous. Acceptance of anti-white principles. TV shows are not written with recognition of the differences between the races in mind. As we are bombarded daily with anti-white principles, we begin to accept the methods Hollywood teaches. You claim you do not accept anti-white principles. Then why do you watch the same anti-white shows each week? If you keep watching them, you are endorsing them and the principles they teach. Soon you could find yourself opposing your own race, and even rebuking those who bring truth, and this could sow discord among our brethren, and create confusion in people who are new to the movement. That's the end of this particular article. I'm definitely not trying to push a Christian agenda, but some of their arguments strike a chord in our worldview also. And yes, I admit, I did change the last paragraph from a Christian point of view to an anti-white one by substituting anti-white for Christian and making a few minor edits to help emphasize that point, but I certainly didn't change much. There's another interesting article at simpletoremember.com describing the harmful effects of television on children and how it leads to ADD, ADHD, obesity, sleep disorders, and other problems. The following is an excerpt from the AmazingDiscoveries.org website dealing with deception, media, television, the brain, and violence. Dr. Herbert Krugman, a brainwave researcher, has gone on record saying, "Television is a communication medium that effortlessly transmits huge quantities of information to the viewers not thought about at the time of exposure." Dr. Eric Pepper, another influential brainwave researcher and writer, once said, "The horror of television is that the information goes in, but we do not react to it. It goes right into our memory pool, and perhaps we react to it later, but we do not know what we are reacting to." When you watch television, you are training yourself not to react, and so later on, you're doing things without knowing why you're doing them or where they are coming from. Under the influence of television, the frontal lobe cannot function at its full capacity. The brain does record information. Sight, memory, and emotions are all functioning well. Nevertheless, the brain no longer critically analyzes the information. Terrible scenes can be depicted, but the viewer tends only to laugh or shrug them off. Normally, if those kinds of events happen in real life, the individual would be appalled. Even this is changing as people become more desensitized through exposure. Despite how you respond, whether by laughing, apathetically staring, averting the eyes in disgust, or 100 other ways, scenes are indelibly imprinted upon the mind. When you see a rerun, once it begins, you know you have seen it before. The memory is there, although the last time you saw it, your frontal lobe was not any more active than it is this time. From a personal perspective, I, as a white nationalist, do not welcome Jews, Negroes, or homosexuals into my home. When we watch television, that is exactly what we are doing. By watching, we passively accept programs that promote concepts and ideas we would find abhorrent if we were rationally debating them. I was recently exposed to a scene at the end of a lame movie where a white man had become married to a negress, something that is all too common these days in TV and movies. Anyone concerned with the cognitive abilities of their families and themselves, whether they are white nationalists or not, needs to rationally consider whether this form of entertainment is worth the risk. As a white nationalist, you need to consider whether you intend to be accepting the views of our sworn enemies. Maybe it's time we reconsider just how much TV we watch and how much it's holding us back from all we have the ability to be. Hail victory, comrades!
Okay, me again, and let's get back to my explanation to you guys as to why we're not doing like we're supposed to on TV, i.e. sitting in a big, huge compound out in the wilderness with me meditating in a lodge, thinking great thoughts, and guys in strange costumes patrolling the grounds with automatic weapons and dogs, or whatever your particular vision of the non-nebulous Northwest Front might be. First off, I played that last part back, and I can tell right away that 5,000 number is going to give some of our non-Northwest comrades a bit of agita. I can hear the responses from goat dancers and non-goatish folks as well, with their own podcasts, to the effect that, "Oh, that's bullshit, Harold. My white podcast has so many more listeners than that." Well, maybe. I frankly doubt it, but I'm not going to get into one of these "how many stormtroopers can dance on the head of a pin" arguments. It's entirely possible that Political Cesspool and maybe some of Don Black or Jim Delaney's podcasts and videos have more of an audience, but we're not talking about them. What I will be getting from this podcast is a lot of the usual movement yada yada. "My club's better than your club. My club's better than yours. My club's better 'cause Harold is a poopy head. My club's better than yours." Another one of our many, many problems is the fact that a lot of our self-appointed leaders are middle-aged adolescents, and the internet accelerates that crap to warp speed. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the Northwest Front, the only movement currently on the scene that has a snowball's chance in hell of actually accomplishing something. I'll say this again, by internet standards, white nationalists are a tiny, tiny little community. Of course, this gets into how one defines white nationalist. Now, if you want to include various types of conservatives and conspiracy types, birthers, 9/11 truthers, radical Second Amendment people, radical Federal Reserve boffins, sure, there's a lot more of us than 5,000. That having been said, I will reiterate something. You guys need to burn this into your brains. There are countless millions of white people out there who would support our cause with their hearts, their minds, their wallets, and their migrations if they were ever allowed to know that we are here and to hear our message on a level playing field. Because, you see, we happen to have something that no one else has, not Obama or Hillary or the Republicans or the media or anyone else. We have the truth. We are right, and they are wrong. We are right, and with that and $1.59, I can buy a small cup of coffee at McDonald's. You see, out here in the real world, good does not always triumph over evil, and truth does not always overcome lies. If that were true, then I would have grown up, hopefully happy and prosperous, in the Confederate States of America. Bolshevism would never have gotten off the ground, because there would have been no First World War. Or if there had, the Germans would have won it. And Adolf Hitler could have lived out his life as a bohemian artist in Vienna, because there would have been no need for his mission to humanity. The bad people have been winning for a century now, ever since August 4, 1914. I won't go off on a long digression about that here, because that's not the topic of discussion. And if you're a regular RFN listener, I know you've already heard a number of my rants on that subject. Now, before we take this any further, let's have a quick word about money. I don't want you to think that this is a fund appeal. It isn't. I'm going to explain to you why the white nationalist movement's financial problems are largely self-inflicted, and why there is no need for anybody to rob any armored cars or pizza huts in order to finance the movement. I call this the 10x1000 program. Now let's say we've got 1,000 quote-unquote members. I persuade every one of those members to donate $10 per month on a regular basis. That's $10,000 a month, or $120,000 per year. Twice a year, we have fund appeals, and I ask that people kick in a little bit more, say $100 at least. And virtually everybody can find $100 for something he really believes in. So that puts it up to about $320,000 a year income for our movement. But let's say I could get all 5,000 of you who listen to this podcast on at least an intermittent basis to do that. That's $50,000 a month, $600,000 a year just on dues, and if you add the fund appeal money twice a year, that's over $1 million that we would be getting in on a purely voluntary basis, no armored car robbery required. But the problem is, you won't do it. You guys just sort of sit there and absorb it all like sponges. Anyway, we'll get to that later. Let's get back on topic here. Now, why can't we, or let's be honest, in your minds, why can't Harold use those 5,000 people to create at least another national alliance, which, as nearly as I can figure, is what most of you want to see? Okay, let's talk about that. First off, in point of fact, that is kind of what we're doing. I've said it before, and I'll say it again, we are in fact making some progress. The problem is that it is too slow, glacially slow. And we don't have the time anymore to wait. Now, we are just beginning now what we should have begun back in the 1970s. We are beginning to lay the foundations for infrastructure. I think if the NF does fail, and if any historians survive the next century and ever sit down to analyze why we failed, the final verdict will be, given the mediocre human material they had to work with, they should have started 40 years earlier. And yes, I assume part of the responsibility for that. But we can't just sit around contemplating our navels and thinking regretfully about what we should have done. The clock is ticking, and we have to find some way to jumpstart this process, which is why Andy and I are on here every week shouting and gesticulating at all of you to get your asses in gear. It is happening. Right now, I am in the process of counseling and working with multiple people, many of them married couples with young children, helping them to reach the decision to make that leap of faith and bring themselves and their assets and their children and their lives here to the homeland where they're supposed to be. It's hard, because these really are substantial people with homes and mortgages and careers and roots in their communities where they are now. And contrary to what you may think, I'm not totally out of touch with reality. And I know that when you have a business and a home to liquidate, and when you have elderly relatives dependent on you and children whose futures you're responsible for, this is not an easy thing to do, and even once the decision is made, it takes time. Now, these people are not tattooed skinheads, as the complaining individual in our comments section on May the 22nd apparently fears. nor are they even t-shirt youth, the footloose white flotsam that Obama's America produces. Now, if we had a building and a bunkhouse like Pastor Butler had at Hayden Lake, if we could give them our own alternative to living in their mother's basement and let them come and live in our basement, I could have 50 t-shirt youth up here in a month. Now, there will come a time for that, I think, when we have an infrastructure in place and when we can give these kids something to do besides lounge around and drink beer and get into trouble with the locals. When there is an actual party with local units and where a newcomer is immediately assigned a place in the pecking order and duties to fulfill in exchange for their mattress on the floor and their daily bowl of soup and beans and rice from the communal pot in a non-alcoholic and drug-free environment. The NVA's General Order Number 10 needs to come into existence long before the NVA does. Okay, let's take a moment to look at the whole question of the clubhouse. And let's face it, to most people, that's what it is. The ultimate symbol of movement success. The building. Now, I've never bought into that. I've always considered that a headquarters should be just that. A secure place with every item of necessary plant and equipment, as quiet as a monastery, where an immense amount of work is done. But being who you are, white people of the 20th and 21st century, most of you, especially those who remember Hayden Lake and Rockwell Hall and Glenn Miller's farm, see it as a hangout and a picnic ground. Okay, let's talk about the clubhouse. But before we do, second music break. This is the Kingston Trio.
Stands little Maggie with her grand glass in her hand. She's drinking away her troubles, oh Lord, and filling another man. How could I ever stand it just to see them two blue eyes?
Yawk, yawk.
They shine just like the diamonds in the sky.
Pretty flowers were made for blooming. Pretty stars were made to shine.
Yay, yay.
Pretty girls were made for boys to love. Surely Maggie was made for mine.
Well, well, yonder stands little Maggie with her grand glass in her hand. She's drinking away her troubles, oh Lord, and fooling another man.
Well, they marched me down to the station with my suitcase in my hand. I'm going away for to leave you, my love, going to a far distant land.
Oh, well,
sometimes I have a nickel, and sometimes I have a dime, and sometimes I have $10, oh Lord, just to pay little Maggie's fine.
Oh, well,
yonder stands little Maggie with her grand glass in her hand. She's drinking away her troubles, oh Lord, and fooling another man. And fooling another man.
For the past 12 years and 5 Northwest Front party manuals, I have been attempting to explain to you people the classic revolutionary cell system, something which is vitally necessary if we are ever to have any hope of breaking with the past and not just continuing to do the same thing over and over again and hoping for a different result each time. I've tried to get you to wrap your minds around it and practice it, and I've pretty much failed. The closest we come to a cell system is our own self-imposed isolation from one another and our refusal to live in communities. Now, I said earlier that I will not berate you or scold you for being what the Jews have made you, and I'll stick to that. But I will point out that most of the successful revolutionaries of the past century, both left and right, the people we claim to admire so much, have used some variation on the cell system and have not utilized big, huge buildings and mass rallies and marches, etc. Yes, 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 I know. Weimar Germany had its brown house. Pre-fascist Italy had its Casa di Combattimento. But those were different times and places, and above all, those were different white men from us. I'm sorry, I don't have a time machine, and I can't bring back those eras or those men. Of course, you all can go back, if ever you choose, but so far you haven't chosen to do so. Now, the fact is that the most effective revolutionaries of all time, the pre-1917 Bolsheviks, operated out of clandestine apartments and certain cafes and soup kitchens in the back rooms of pubs and restaurants on occasion. The first headquarters building the Bolsheviks ever had was the Smolny Institute in St. Petersburg, which they took over at gunpoint. The fact is that most revolutions on both sides of the spectrum involve a cell structure of some kind, and the primacy of an idea, not real estate and not outward form or display. In every successful revolution I know of, form always followed function. Americans don't get that. This is a very European concept. It is utterly alien to the completely materialistic American mindset, and I've come to realize over the past 12 years just how alien it is to the people that I have to work with and somehow I have to free. Americans are socially engineered to respond to money, to the appearance of money, to the perception that money is present somewhere. This is how generations of American con men have worked their magic on the American people. They have made it look like they've already got it made. They drive the big cars, they wear the $2,000 suits, smoke the big cigars, talk the talk, walk the walk, etc. Think Jim and Tammy Baker. Now, one of the things that will be necessary in order to convince this comrade who's complaining in the Homeland blog comments section about how shapeless and nebulous the Northwest Front is, and in fact, he or she said this outright, is that he or she wants to see a big National Alliance-style compound with an imposing-looking building bedecked with flags and guys in costumes with semi-autos standing guard like it was a tiny town version of the Reichschancellery. Above all, American white nationalists want to go to those picnics on the grounds. Like Aryan nations is the comment I most frequently hear. The people making this comment seem to forget how that 20 acres in Hayden Lake was lost because Pastor Butler did not practice any security measures to speak of, he did not ban alcohol from his home, and he ended up running a halfway house for derelicts. You guys want picnics, or rallies, or congresses, or whatever you want to call them, but let's be honest, picnics is a little more accurate, because the reason you want to go to these things is to find a crowd that you can hide in, people that you can yak with about niggers and Jews and all the horrible things the system has done to you. You want to find people who will listen to your tale of woe, and who will make you listen to theirs, even if only for a short time. You want the validation of your own feelings and thoughts and opinions by others, and that is perfectly human and understandable. I keep telling you, I'm not totally divorced from human reality. I get it. Now me, I tell you to achieve this validation by migrating here to the Northwest homeland and forming and living and building your lives in nationalist communities, starting with small family groups. But for most of you, that involves too much risk, inconvenience, and physical effort. You want the quick fix that a good racist picnic gives you. And to be fair, most of you are willing to set aside the time and do the long-distance driving and pay the freight for a good racist picnic. Now, let's lay it on the line, guys. This is what a large number of you, if not the majority of you, expect from a visible and non-nebulous Northwest Front. Aryan Nations version 3.0, right? National Alliance version 4.0, right? Trouble is, for that we need the rolling acres and the buildings, and when I don't pull the magic beans and $300,000 out of my pocket and cause these things to spring up from the earth without you having to do anything at all, that makes it my fault, because Harold is a loser and a con man, and the Northwest will never work, and all the usual goat dance crap about me being the Grand Rabbi of Jerusalem that always comes up when people are looking for an excuse to back away because the pressure to actually do something instead of generate endless words is getting uncomfortable. Now, I say again, I am not scolding or berating. Wouldn't do any good if I did. I'm just as American as you are, and I, too, have felt the call of the edifice complex. It was a vital part of my own early movement experience. I know I've said this before, but please bear with me. It's time for a little spaced repetition. When I came into this thing of ours in 1972, everybody and his kid brother had a building, even if it was just a little storefront, be they Klan or Nazi or John Birch Society, whatever. I think the old party had 8 buildings open across the country at one stage. When I left the Army, I went right to the old El Mahdi NSWPP headquarters, where I became a stormtrooper, meaning a member of a small group of about a dozen young men like me who wore the costume, and where I had a new commanding officer, Joe Tomasi, and where I was given a cot in the back room to sleep on and daily duties to fulfill. Then I went on to National Headquarters in Arlington, where I became editor of the party newspaper, White Power. Now, when I was doing night duty on watch in both El Monte and Franklin Road, I read books from the literature room that completed my racial education, told me what was what, and gave me knowledge that most young white people today will never acquire, because even in PDF format, it involves reading unillustrated blocks of text for content. Now, if I were 18 years old and I tried to go racial today, I'd simply be tossed onto the internet to wander through the gibberish on Stormfront and VNN, and I very much doubt that I would have stuck with it for 42 years. A large part of that ambiance that gave our wee little movement at least some staying power back in the day was our basis in the real world before the internet, when knowledge came from books that you held in your hand, and when it was still possible for racial nationalist groups to own real estate, before the Chinese bought most American commercial real estate out, and before Morris Dees invented the abuse of civil litigation to do an end run around the First Amendment and silence critics of the liberal dictatorship. The physical presence of actual buildings where our flags were up and our books were out, and where there was a physical address you could go to and find actual racial white people, was a huge part of that. At the risk of pushing repetition to the level of screaming boredom, I can remember people driving all weekend from many states away just to arrive at the old headquarters on Franklin Road or Pierce Street in Raleigh or North Street in Raleigh, and for a few hours sit down in the literature room in liberated territory where our own flag was flying in the sky, and speak with a uniformed duty officer or a fellow National Socialist in person and not on the phone or by letter, to remind and reassure themselves that yes, there were others and they were not all alone in the world, and then spending another 18 or 20 hours driving back in time to be at work on Monday morning. That kind of thing happened more times than I can count. So yes, I understand that there are two sides to this. I understand why this complaining comrade feels the way he or she feels, that the Northwest Front is nebulous and shapeless and insubstantial because we don't have a big building to show you. We are not sufficiently validating him or her enough to justify his or her support, so we don't get it. We are not giving this person what they need, what they expect, what their upbringing and their past movement experience leads them to expect. I understand the point that he or she is trying to make. I understand that many of you agree with it, and I wish there were an easy fix for it. But there isn't. The world has become a much more complicated and evil place since the 1970s. I understand the place that the picnic has in the American psyche, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we will never ever have open picnics on a compound or inside a big shiny headquarters building or whatever. One thing I have learned is that in the movement, never say never. But that time where we will have enough popular support and participation to risk open come-one-come-all picnics is way, way in the future. Now, right now, there are simply too many evil people who would use such an event to try to do us harm. The Aryan Nations used to get an average of about 200 people to their twice-yearly shindigs up there in Hayden Lake. And that's bringing people from all over the country. So we actually were able to get enough people together to equate to roughly the size of an average wedding reception. It has been estimated that at any given gathering, as many as 10% of the attendees were bad hats of various kinds, undercover cops and agents from every federal law enforcement agency, and even worse, undercover reporters. You guys ever see or hear of a movie called Evil in Clear River? It's based on the James Keegstra case in Canada about how some small town in the Northwest drives out the wicked revisionist high school teacher on a rail. In order to do research about our nasty racist mindset, one of the producers, a Jewess, put on a blonde wig and actually talked her way into spending a week staying at Hayden Lake in the compound, where she gathered all kinds of information to insult and humiliate us. I bet she still has all kinds of interesting stories to tell on the liberal cocktail party circuit about that little episode. It was perfectly safe for her, of course. This was the real world and not a movie. That woman knew that if she'd been caught, no one would have dared to do anything at all about it, and she would simply have been escorted off the property. But do you guys see what I'm saying here? The definition of stupidity is continuing to do the same thing over and over while expecting a different result. We have to stop doing that, and I'm sorry if my efforts to get you to wrap your minds around this and the fact that I don't shout out everybody's name and address and make Facebook pages with tricolors for all our new migrants makes the NF look nebulous. But you have to understand that what we are doing is dangerous. Yes, we have gatherings up here with the NF. We had one over Memorial Day weekend, but we cannot do come one, come all picnics, especially on public property, because I say to you again, evil people will send other evil people to do us harm and destroy our lives for the crime of criticizing the dictator and opposing the one-party state. The NF is sufficiently new, and we have so far been sufficiently careful so that despite a few unpleasant incidents, no one up here has gone to prison yet. I don't know how long we can keep up that record. I really hope that some of you guys don't have to learn about the cell system the hard way, no pun intended. But part of the price for that is that, yes, we have had to remain a bit nebulous. Okay, I'm tempted to play Who Are You for the third music break, but I played that only a couple of weeks ago, and Won't Get Fooled Again is too long, so let's see. Apropos of nothing in particular, here's Makeham and Clancy.
Our troop was made ready at the dawn of the day. From lovely Enniskillen, they were marching us away. They put us then on board a ship to cross the raging main to fight in bloody battle in the sunny land of Spain. Fare thee well, Enniskillen, fare thee well for a while. And all around the borders of Erin's Green Isle. And when the war is over, we'll return in full bloom. And you'll all welcome home your Enniskillen dragoons. Spain, it is a gallant land where wine and ale flow free. There's lots of lovely women there to dandle on your knee. And often in the tavern there we'd make the rafters ring, when every soldier in the house would raise his glass and sing. Fare thee well, Enniskillen, fare thee well for a while. And all around the borders of Erin's Green Isle. And when the war is over, we'll return in full bloom, and you'll all welcome home your Enniskillen dragoons. Well, we fought for Ireland's glory there, and many a man did fall, from musket and from bayonet and from thundering cannonball. And many a foeman we laid low amid the battle throng, and as we prepared for action, you would often hear this song. Fare thee well, Enniskillen, fare thee well for a while. Fighting's over and for home we have set sail. Our flag above this lofty ship is fluttering in the gale. They've given us a pension, boys, a fourpence each a day. And when we reach Enniskillen, never more we'll have to say.
Fare thee well, Enniskillen, fare thee well for a while. And all around the borders of Erin's Green Isle. And when the war is over, we'll return in full bloom.
I've played all this back, and I'm still not happy with it, because I don't think I fully answered the question or the complaint, but the problem is that this is such a long and complex subject that it's almost impossible to adequately convey what I am talking about unless the person listening has ever tried to do this themselves, and I think maybe there's probably a few out there who have. Some of you, I think, know what it's like to do anything and everything he or she can to get this pale, quivering white blob to respond to any kind of racial message with something besides words. Now, sometimes people come to me and they say, oh, Harold, you talk about character all the time. You run everybody down. You're so depressing. You need to make it fun, Harold. You need to tell us what we want to hear. We need you upbeat, Harold. Yeah, upbeat. That's it. Yeah, I can do that.
I don't think you're happy enough. That's right. I'll teach you to be happy. I'll teach your grandmother to suck eggs. Now, boys and girls, let's try it again.
Happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy, joy. Happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy, joy. Happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy, joy. Happy, happy, joy, joy, joy.
That upbeat enough for you? I mean, let's face it, there isn't really too much to be upbeat about in this situation, is there? Look, let me see if I can sum this up with a kind of zoological comparison. Wolf packs have a number of what it's called beta wolves and one alpha wolf, but their strength comes from the pack as a whole, acting as a team. An alpha without betas is just a single individual, and he's limited in what he can accomplish by way of pulling down caribou or blowing down little pigs' houses by his own size and strength. Now, I would hardly call myself an alpha of anything, but the principle is the same. What you have to understand is that I have now pretty much reached the limit of what I can do as one individual without substantial assistance from you. And by substantial, I mean something other than words. Now, what this means is that until such time as there is a serious improvement in our resources and our manpower, there probably will not be much visible improvement in our nebulosity situation. I say again, it is happening, but it is happening slow, slow, slow as molasses in winter time. I do not need more books or websites or links to YouTube videos that tell me things I already know. I do not need articles or written material that you want me to read out on here, although I can always use MP3 files that let us hear your voice as opposed to just my own on here. I don't need long Dutch uncle letters and emails explaining to me in great detail all about how I'm doing it wrong. If you think that, I want you to show me, not tell me, how to do it right. I don't need long lecturing letters and emails telling me all about what I should do. I want to get letters and emails telling me what you are going to do, or better yet, what you have already done. I do not want to get letters and emails from you explaining to me in abstruse detail why you can't possibly migrate or putting me off with vague promises of, well, maybe in a couple of years when I do this and do that and sail around the world in a rowboat, so forth and so on. I can't help but feel that there is still this bizarre expectation among some of you that someday, somehow, with no effort on your part, you're going to turn on Fox News or CNN and see me mounted on a white horse wearing a cape and a Three Musketeers hat and flourishing my saber aloft and yelling, "Charge!" Actually, I think even at my age, I'm still capable of doing that if someone will give me the horse and the hat and the cloak and the saber and, above all, get their pale butts out here and charge behind me. I say again, I'm not mad. I'm not scolding. I'm not ranting and raving. I am simply telling you how things are. I need money. I need your bodies here in the homeland in a participatory capacity. And I need your help in breaking through the blackout by bringing as many white people as possible to northwestfront.org and northwestfront.net. Give me those things, even in a small measure, and you will find that the Northwest Front becomes a lot less nebulous. Let's start with that. But for now, our time is up, so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington, 98194. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Anaban. Freedom.
Oh, what glorious pride and sorrow fill the name. speeding cart in my hood's morning noon. Who could follow in their footsteps at the rising of the moon?